Okay, so welcome to your second class on visual art in Britain since 1945. And the question we have been trying to ask is the link between visual arts and popular culture. And what I'm finding really is that this idea of popular culture is not so easy to divide. Some things are obviously popular culture, like rap or hip-hop or rock and roll. And other things are obviously high culture, like opera and ballet. But there's a lot of things which are in the middle. Millions of people go to the Tate Gallery. Is it popular culture? I will come back to this question. The most prestigious prize in Britain for contemporary art is the Turner Prize, named after Turner, who was a 19th century British painter who has his wonderful own gallery in London, which I highly recommend. And the Turner Prize every year is given for a particular work of contemporary art. Sometimes this contemporary art is rather difficult. Let me give you some examples. In 2010, Susan Phillips won the Turner Prize, and she won it for a performance where she sang a song about the history of Glasgow in four different places in Glasgow, which symbolised this history. So this is a piece of art. You cannot look at it. Yeah, you can't buy it. It's a performance. So this is one of the examples of how modern art and contemporary art has tried to make the idea of what art can be much wider. So she just sang a song in a symbolic place. Huh? And if you weren't there, you missed it. So that's one example, and that might be considered perhaps to be a typical winner of the Turner Prize, because they like things which are a little bit controversial. This one is relatively simple. This is a piece called, it's a sculpture, and it's called Do Words Have Voices by Martin Boyce, and this won the Turner Prize in 2011. Now here, I think you can see, we have a sculpture which is a little bit more difficult. Really, if you wanted to appreciate this, we don't have the time, you would need to know, what did Martin Boyce do before? What is he trying to do? Where does it fit in his idea of what art is? Immediately to look at, it's perhaps not so impressive. And they won the Turner Prize in 2011. Oh, and here you have what the newspaper said about that particular sculpture. Now, again, we're only having the chance to look at it for a few seconds. Really, if you were interested, you would have to spend a bit of time to know what you thought of it. But this is what The Guardian said about it when it won the Turner Prize. With his quietly atmospheric, lyrically autumnal sculptural installation recalling a melancholy urban park with its metallic trees and scattered paper leaves, Martin Boyce has been announced as the winner of the £25,000 Turner Prize. Boyce was narrowly the bookies' favourite for the prize, ahead of painter George Shaw, who chronicles the scrubby, dilapidated suburban streets of his native Midlands. Boyce, 44 years old, is the third Turner Prize winner in succession, either brought up or educated in Glasgow, a fact that now confirms the indelible importance of the city to Britain's art world. Another winners of the Turner Prize each time. £25,000, that's something, isn't it? In 2012, the winner again was a piece of work which is not very easy to approach for people who are not very familiar with contemporary art. This was a video, it was a 20-minute video, about the Woolworths Choir of 1979. This is a play on words. There's a big shop called Woolworths, and in 1979 there was a terrible fire, and quite a few people were killed. And so the video, along with the music and sound effects, is a tribute to the people who were killed in this fire. And so this 20-minute video won the prize. So you can see today, if you want to win a prize in contemporary art, you can be a painter or a sculptor or a video artist or one of those happenings, singing songs in different parts of Glasgow. Of course, usually you don't win, usually you lose, but you know. Again, these are kind of rather avant-garde approaches to art, something rather new. Not easy if you're not an expert in it. And of course, you have a lot of different opinions. Some people think it's just eccentric, pretentious, meaningless. Yeah, many people criticize contemporary art, and some of it probably is. But certainly, what they're certainly trying to do is to have a much wider view of what art is. Now, perhaps you can see the difference between the fourth plinth and the Turner Prize. The fourth plinth was not so difficult to understand. The ship in the bottle, the rocking horse. It was not so difficult. You'd not think, what's that? You know. Whereas some of this can be pretty way out for us. Here you have then what the Guardian said about the 2012 prize, the video about the Woolworths fire of 1979. This has been a good year for the Turner Prize. All the artists seem to me to deserve their place. So he's talking about the finalists. No clear winner, no obvious losers. But in the end, Elizabeth Price deserved to win with a 20-minute video that is as finger-clicking and rhythmic, thanks to the music of the Shangri-Las, as it is painful and elegiac, dealing as it does with a catastrophic 1979 fire in a Woolworths department store in Manchester in which 10 people died. The focus and drive of Price's work, the cutting of the atmosphere mark her out. There are silences, bursts of music, a terrific play of words and images, and switches in tempo that take us from an analysis of church architecture to a reconstruction of the fire itself by the Manchester authorities. Her use of footage from the fire itself never feels voyeuristic or meretricious. She does a great deal in 20 minutes. Its complexity has stayed with me. So I think perhaps you can see that if you really wanted to understand this piece, you would have to spend a few hours thinking about it, watch it three times, and it's not something you say, oh, I like it, I don't like it. It's something that's taking longer. Also, you can see the Guardian likes to use very long words. Do you know what the word meretricious means? Here's the bad news. I have forgotten what it means. It's a very rare word, and I can't remember what it means. So, hey, what can you do? Even university professors sometimes don't know. And this is the 2017 prize. Now, interestingly enough, this is the first time a black woman has won the prize, the prize in 2017. Strangely enough, this is actually a little bit easier. It's something because it's kind of collage. We can see, and they are representing different people. Some of them are historical figures, and so on. So it's actually a little easier to approach than some of the previous work. There it is. I'm not sure know if I can see any of the characters, but I'm told that Ronald Reagan is somewhere, and Margaret Thatcher is somewhere in there. And here is what the BBC News said about it. Lubaina Himid is the winner then. Described in February by the Daily Telegraph as the underappreciated hero of black British art, Himid made her name in the 1980s as one of the leaders of the British black arts movement, both painting and curating exhibitions of similarly overlooked artists. But she has now got the recognition she deserves. Her section of the Turner Prize exhibition contains work from the 1980s to today, including wooden figures, pottery, and newspapers that she has painted on. The centrepiece, you just saw it, is 1987's A Fashionable Marriage, based on William Hogarth's Mariage à la Mode, which features a cast of cut-out characters, including a flirting Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan. So here again, you can see that you can see that we're not really in popular art, because you need to know a lot to understand it. You need to say, oh yes, of course, that's a reference to the 19th century draftsman William Hogarth and his famous drawing, famous, yeah? Not so famous, yeah? So this is staying really with the high art. That is the idea that if you don't know a lot about art, it's not for you, because you need to know who William Hogarth is for a start. Okay, so much for the Turner Prize. I will come back to the Turner Prize at the end because, as you can imagine, there's always people who say, oh, the Turner Prize, it's all a load of rubbish. And a group of newspapers have established a new prize called Not the Turner Prize. And we will see that at the end as a contrast, as a criticism or even an attack on contemporary art and what it's seen as. Now I'm going to move on to some modern British artists who are perhaps a little easier, well, certainly a lot easier, and more popular. And here we're getting too close to this line, this imaginary line between high culture and popular culture. One of these, Martin Parr, who was born in the north of England, like all the best people. Nesma? Yeah. Okay, there you go. She agrees. Martin Parr. Have you heard of Martin Parr? Okay. He's a photographer. And photography is one of the art forms which has obviously all through the 20th century risen in importance and changed a lot, because of course today, if you want to be an artist photographer today, your problem is that everybody takes photographs, not every day, but I think almost everybody takes photographs every week. Now, in the 1970s, if you wanted to take photographs on your holiday, you had to take the photographs and then take the film out and take it to the chemist and come back a week later and get your photographs, yeah? And so it was a much rarer thing. What does Martin Parr do? Well, Martin Parr tries to represent some of the lives of ordinary British people. He likes colours and... Well, it's difficult to say exactly what the effect is, but there you have one example of the kind of photographs that he goes for. This is a very, very, very typical one. You can see these are children in the 1960s, I think. This is in the 1960s. You can see they're eating ice cream, but they've got ice cream everywhere. And now they're dead. No, they're fine. On the seaside. So... what is going on here? Of course, the whole idea of art is to make you think. So on the one hand, this is the seaside, and it's a place where you enjoy, where you're full of life. On the other hand, they look a bit, you know, they're just a bit dirty and miserable, and there's no sunshine. You know, there's something going on between the two. And he did a whole series of pictures of the British at the seaside, because the British love to go to the seaside, even though the weather is absolutely terrible. Here you have one which is slightly different. This is in a Chinese or Japanese restaurant. Yeah. He just likes the colours. He just liked the colours. So he was just playing. Does it make you want to eat this? Not really. It's a little bit coloured, isn't it? Yeah, it's a little bit coloured. So here we are at the seaside again. Very ordinary slice of life pictures. Yeah, he doesn't want everybody to smile and look beautiful. I don't know. I mean, each person has the right to have their own personal reaction. But it seems to me to be always a little bit sad, you know, that he shows people with very limited lives. It reminds me of Lowry in a way. Yeah, it shows people having fun, but you know, nothing very extravagant. This is a very typical example here. Can you see where they are? Yeah, where are they? Yeah, they're inside. They're inside. It's not really the sea. It's not really the sky. It's a picture of the sky. So it's warm because it's inside. They're pretending to be at the beach, and in fact they're inside. And you see they're all pretending to be at the beach, but in fact it's an inside beach because it's so cold in Britain. And again, it's like, you know, the beach and the sea is a symbol of freedom and fullness. And here you have it all. You know, you pay your $10 or you pay your £10 and you go in. So it seems to be a little bit of a sad approach to everyday life. He did something else as well, did Martin Parr. He's a collector. He's not just a photographer, he's a collector, and he collects postcards. And he published one collection of the postcards which he collected, and the collection is called Boring Postcards. And he spent many, many years collecting postcards and choosing the most boring ones. That's not a post. Sorry, that's not a postcard. That's a photograph. That's a postcard. This is one of his boring postcards. And in fact, this is a real postcard which was published when the M1 motorway, the first motorway in Britain, was built. And of course, when the British built the first motorway, they were very proud. And so they made this to celebrate it. You know, here is a picture of a service station on the motorway. And of course, today, this is not very exciting. You know, you just, oh no, I must have a selfie of myself with the motorway. Let me send it to my friends, you know. Because motorways are, first of all, considered to be rather boring things, but also, secondly, we see them in a rather negative way today. We don't have pollution, ecology. And so this was actually the pedestrian bridge over the motorway. This is the official postcard produced when the motorway was opened. And so now, publishing it today, a few years ago, in a collection, Martin Parry is bringing in a reflection about how were the motorways seen in the past and how do we see them today. And there's a whole number of other postcards which are similar. This postcard, it's a real postcard, he didn't make it himself. This was produced to celebrate the nuclear reactor. And again, this is the same thing today. You know, we say, oh yeah, great, I'm going to see a nuclear reactor. Let me get a photograph, you know. We have a rather negative view of them today. But at the time, they were considered to be tremendously positive things. And one last one. It's one of my favourites. This is this is a place you go on holiday in the 1970s. Cheap holiday villages. In Britain, this is before people could go to Spain. I mean, ordinary people could go to Spain, it was too expensive. And so here is the photograph. It doesn't look too exciting and luxurious, does it? It looks a bit basic, you know. If you went on holiday there, you might not take a selfie. Yeah. From the Berry Court holiday flatboats, and of course, the good thing is you have the sea just out the window, but otherwise, you know, it's a bit of a boring postcard. And of course, you know, collecting the most boring of postcards can be quite interesting. Last one, away from the postcards, this is a photograph again. And here, again, it's the British at the seaside. But it's not, as you can see, that she's actually, because it's raining, she's turned the deck chair over. I think they must be waiting for the bus, which hasn't come. And there they are, all wrapped up in the dark on the seaside, in the deck chairs, and it's a little bit sad. So in any case, this is Martin Parr, who's one of the most well-known of the contemporary photographers, and he's chosen to take photographs which are not difficult for people. I mean, you don't need to be an expert. So here I think we are more or less in popular culture. But even more so... is the other, apart from photography, photography became more and more accessible as the 20th century went on. Even even today, if you want to paint, you need money. You know, well, photography these days is pretty cheap. But the other tremendous advance in another art form is street arts. And so I'm just going to look for a while at some street arts. Now, obviously, in some ways, street art can definitely be counted with popular culture. First of all, it's for everybody. You don't have to go into a special place. You don't have to pay to go into a museum, or you don't have to look nervously around you as you go into a free gallery. It's really for everybody. And so the idea of doing street art is a deliberate choice. The artists are saying, you know, do I want to paint for a gallery or do I want to paint for the street? It's a choice, and it's a choice which has meaning. And here are some of the thinking that goes behind street art, which is getting bigger and bigger. First, the first thing is it's accessible to the public. And secondly, you can put it anywhere you like. You can put it in the rich parts of town Or the poor parts of town. In fact, it's much easier to do it in the poor parts of town, because in the rich parts of town, the police come and stop you. Yeah. On the other hand, you could do it on the trains. You know how street artists like to paint trains. Yeah, the graph and the hip hop painting of trains. But I'm going to stick to the painting. So it doesn't cost the public anything. It costs the artist not so much. But how can the artist make money? Because, of course, if you're a serious artist, you do want to make some money, even if it's just enough to be able to live, to continue doing art. You know, if you don't want to work in McDonald's during the day and do your art in the evening, you need to think about money. So this can be difficult, the profit for the artist. It can be a difficult point. Of course, they can teach street art. You can teach hip-hop art. A lot of graffiti artists do that. Also, today, the position of graffiti artists has changed. Today, you could probably persuade the town hall in Rouen, in some festival, to say, hey, I'll do some street art in public. Do you have some money? They might say no, but they might say yes. It's not impossible. People do that. Interestingly enough, very frequently, street artists use pseudonyms. They don't use their real name. This is also, of course, a hip-hop tradition, not to use their real name. And it has a meaning, because using your real name is putting forward the individual, whereas not using your real name is putting forward the work of art. In fact, there are many street artists who do not sign their work. Everybody knows who it is, but they do not sign them. Internet is tremendously important for street art, because, of course, you do your street art, and many people don't know where it is. And so what you do is you then photograph it and you put it on your website. And this is also a form of validation. That is, how do we know this street art is from this person? Because it appeared on his website. Yeah. That's how it's done. Some of the street art is political. Not all of it, but you know, it's a thing. And certainly a lot of it is concerned with what we would call subaltern messages, that is to say, messages from groups who are not very much represented in art. And finally, the aesthetic standards. In general, street art is not supposed to be difficult. Yeah, it's not supposed to be, oh, I must study art to understand the street art, you know. It's not supposed to take time, because, of course, typically with street art, you walk past. You might stop, but you might not stop. So it has a particular sort of aesthetic which is imposed by the street. Different towns are better or worse for I was very, very lucky 3 years ago. I went to Sao Paulo, which has the most incredible collection of street art. But London is also well ahead there. London is ahead of Paris for a very simple reason. Paris, the actual town of Paris, is actually quite small. And there's not as many empty walls, whereas London is really a capital, as you will say. Now, one of the British street artists is so successful that you know his name. Yeah. Now, that's quite impressive, you know, to be a street artist where several people in another country know your name. That's really, really successful. Banksy is the most successful of the British street artists at the moment. People know who he is, but many people don't know who he is as well. He was born in 1974, so he is, of course, very, very old. That's definitely the case. What kind of things he does? Well, he always goes for a bit of humour and a little bit of politics. This is one of his early ones. Yeah, so very simple, you know, very, very simple idea. Yeah, quite a political piece, but a very simple idea, really. It's slightly funny and slightly political, in the sense that it's suggesting that it would be good if gay people could be so accepted that that representatives of public order would not be embarrassed. This one is just a joke. Yes, you can see the man and the woman looking out of the window, and this is supposed to be, we imagine, her lover, who is hiding from the husband. Yeah. Quite difficult to do, quite difficult to do. Very often he has to do it in the middle of the night, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning when nobody's watching. So it's a little bit of adventure involved. I'm pretty sure that at one point he went into a zoo and in the middle of the night, and he painted over the penguins, you know, a penguin saying, "I don't like fish, actually." So just little jokes like that could be going on. What else do we have here? He does occasionally go for sculpture. Here's a Banksy sculpture. Oh, sorry, no, that's another humorous one. But here's the sculpture. See, the murder of a telephone box. Of course, this must take a long time to do. Yeah, it must take a long time to do. It's not completely just a joke, because the British telephone box has disappeared slowly, of course, and it is a tremendous symbol of Britain, and so its disappearance or its death, you know, it's got some sort of ideas behind it. And as you will see in a moment, some of Banksy's work is intended to make you think about more difficult questions. This is something which he added to an existing advertisement. The girl is in a real advertisement, and he has added this sexually harassing mouse. Watch out for the mice, they're the worst. Okay. So very varied style. Yes, adding to adverts, sculpture, wall paintings, and so on. Even more varied. Look at this one in America. Yeah. So this is simply a real. This was a real water tank, and he just added, "This looks a bit like an elephant." Yeah. So here we are with, I think, conceptual art, because the thing is the idea. It's not the skill, but also obviously very popular art, because there's nothing difficult about that, and it's quite funny. Now, jokes have always been part of modern art anyway, but this goes perhaps a little further. The drinker, yeah, Banksy, instead of the thinker, the drinker. Okay, I can't see the details on that. I'm not quite sure how, but he managed to make some ways quite a lot of money. He made a film. I mean, not a huge amount of money, but enough to do bigger projects. And so he opened up in. Have you heard of this? Could you tell us something about it? Yeah. Could you just tell people what it was?
It was called Dismaland.
It was Dismaland, yes. Yeah. So he actually opened a small amusement park, which was a parody of Disneyland, and it was called Dismaland. Dismal means miserable. And so here you have, as you can see, the Cinderella on the way to the ball has an accident, and she's dead. And here are the journalists taking the photographs. So obviously it's supposed to be very amusing. And there were rides as well. It was a real amusement park. And so he did make some money with it. It was quite popular. My cousin went there. And I would definitely put it in the area of popular culture, because my cousin's just an ordinary working class guy. He's not interested in contemporary art particularly. This was quite a big project, cost a lot of money. And here is a little more of it. You see the castle. That's the Dismaland castle. And this is the Little Mermaid and the, yeah. So a simple idea, but quite a big idea. Hey, you know, what about doing a big parody of Disneyland that people can come to? Yeah, so it's obviously quite ambitious, much more ambitious than painting a painting for a gallery, for an individual to buy. So this is public art, and I have to say we're very proud of Banksy in Britain, because we got him going. That's all I have of the pictures of Banksy, but he did some other things. Perhaps you heard some more political things. Perhaps you heard that in Jerusalem, two years ago, there was a big wall built by the government to keep the Palestinians away. Banksy bought a building opposite the wall and opened it as a hotel. And when you go in the windows, all you can see is the wall from the windows. So he opened it as a parody hotel. And the money was for a Palestinian charity or something. So a very political project, and also which got into the newspapers because he's Banksy. So there's some interesting things going on then. So, because in some ways, what is the role of an artist? Well, I already mentioned to make you think. But there's also some artists who think that they should be the conscience of society, whether it's in rock music or in visual art and so on. We have some other street artists in the UK. Just a few of them. This is by Pang. And this is a very recent one, a political piece of street art in London. And it's quite simply the portrait of a refugee from Syria and his story. So a very, 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 very simple idea. But of course, behind it is the idea that many people complain about refugees, but we don't know them individually. And so, this is what this is the story of this particular person. This was in a context where there had been quite a few campaigns of the right wing against immigrants and migrants and against refugees. So a political intervention in street art. Here's a Dale Grimshaw. These people are not so well known. Dale Grimshaw piece about West Papua. Again, very political. That's the same guy, I think. I can't remember the name of this guy who does the stick men. Anna Lauren, London. Now, quite a lot of these street artists in London come from somewhere else. They come from Norway or Argentina. It's an international, there's an international collective going on there now. Honto. We don't even know who that is. And there is one of the Brazilians who comes over to London. Okay, so that was just a little look round street art and what it can be as perhaps a bridge between visual arts and popular culture. And the last thing I wanted to look at on the visual art before I'm going to move on to television in a moment. But the last thing I wanted to look at in the visual art is the Not the Turner Prize, a group of conservative newspapers who were so angry about the kind of rather strange art being encouraged by the Contemporary Art Prize, the Turner Prize, that they decided to establish the Not the Turner Prize. A very, very interesting idea. A Burton artist is hoping a portrait of a pal will land him a £20,000 prize in a prestigious national competition. Simon Watson, 33, is one of 20 finalists from more than 8,000 entries in this year's Not the Turner Prize competition, which promotes real art above the often baffling conceptual pieces which dominate the real Turner Prize. And this is the standard conservative criticism of contemporary art, that it's baffling, you can't understand it, it's not real art. The competition was started by a national newspaper in protest at controversial previous winners of the Turner Prize, which have included Damien Hirst's cows pickled in formaldehyde and a mound of concrete poured into a derelict house. This year's Turner Prize judges had to choose between entries including two vases depicting child abuse, a mound of rotting apples, and a sculpture of blow-up sex dolls. However, Simon's painting, entitled The Groom Smoking, is now hanging in London's Mall galleries, waiting to be judged by a panel chaired by Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber, who owns one of the biggest private art collections in Britain. The panel also includes four of Britain's top artists, wildlife expert and Rolling Stones guitarist Ronnie Wood, landscape artist Tom Coates, portrait painter India J. Burley, and portrait and nudes expert in Andrew James. So I'm going to show you a few of the pictures from the Not the Turner Prize. What kind of pictures do you think that we will see? What kind of pictures do you think there will be? Any ideas? What are you expecting here in the Not the Turner Prize? Let's have a look. You see the landscape, the animal painting, the portrait, the thing. Very traditional ideas. Now, and the people who organise it, for them, that this is what they consider to be then real art. Okay, what do you think? It's okay? Okay. Well, this is the debate a little bit between traditional art, where the idea is it should look beautiful, and contemporary art, where the idea is, does it make you think? So the traditional artists would say, well, this is fine, this is well done, it's difficult to do, it's difficult to paint a portrait, it's well done, it's pretty. Whereas the contemporary art defender would say, this can never make you think. It's doing, again, something which has been done 100 times before. So, I mean, there is no solution to this, you know, there's no solution to this debate. It's just the two sides of it to understand it there. Okay.